Have you ever received one of those emails or messages asking you to help a rich businessman or a prince in need? Usually they're stuck in some precarious situation, like they've been kidnapped or they're in some political hot water. Or a classic favorite of mine, they're stranded in space. In this episode, I want to get into a story about a classic internet scam, a tale of predator versus prey, and in this situation, how the prey was able to turn the tables and become the predator. This is Cloak and Dagger, a podcast about OSINT, technology, and global conflict. I'm MJ Benias. This podcast is powered by Sapper Labs Group. For more, visit www.sapperlabs.com.
So I can never resist a challenge to try and figure something out, especially using OSINT.
This is Griffin Glynn. You might remember him from episode 3. Griffin works for the National Child Protection Task Force as their head of investigations. He goes after child predators.
So this person advises me, hey, I'm very sick. I'm diagnosed with an illness. I need to donate this money to an honest person. And you are the person that I've decided to donate this money to, right? Apparently, they deposited a sum of $4.6 million into one of the leading banks in their country and wanted to pass those funds on to me.
A scam email. I get them all the time, and you do too. They're incredibly common. This particular scam is known as an advance fee scam, or sometimes a 419 fraud, and it became hugely popular in the 90s with the rapid rise of the internet. And Nigeria became the epicenter of this unique way to earn a living. Now, this scam exists the world over, and it's centuries old. In the early 1800s, there was an infamous French criminal named Eugène Vidocq, and he became a white hat, starting his own criminal investigation firm, a sort of criminologist society that would aid French police and solve crimes. Anyway, in one of his books, he describes something called the Spanish Prisoner Confidence Trick. Today we call them cons, but it went something like this.
Music!
A confidence trickster, or what we call today a con artist, will approach someone of relatively high status, often through a mutual acquaintance, or perhaps it's at a party or a tavern. Ooh, a tavern. I kind of like the sound of that. Hold on. Let's make this real. Now, the mark needs to have money. They have to be rich enough to basically be able to part with a small enough fortune. They have to be a member of the gentry or something like that. And they basically get set up, and they're told a wicked story. The con artist will say something like,
"Listen, I have something I need to tell you. It's a secret. Only you can know. I have a cousin. He's a nobleman imprisoned in Spain."
And so the mark is brought into this delicious secret, something quite salacious for the 19th century mind. I'm sure monocles would have literally fallen out at such thoughts. But think about it. They get brought into this bigger and seemingly important story, something that could move them up into higher circles of polite society, and even earn them some money. Now, this wealthy nobleman trapped in a Spanish prison cannot simply tell the Spanish authorities who he is. It would be detrimental to him. Perhaps he took a secret Spanish lover, or maybe he has a second family, or maybe he did something illegal. It doesn't matter. Anyway, back to the con.
"I need to get him out, but it must be done quietly. I need to raise money to get him released, and I'm very close. I just need a little more.
And so the Mark is told that for a small sum of money, he can help get this nobleman released. It can't be too much, though. It has to be enough that they can part with it and not feel awed or as if something's wrong. But the part of the con that's important is that they're promised that when the nobleman is back from Spain, when he's finally home, that the Mark will receive a fortune in return. Put a little bit of money down now, receive a whole bunch more later. And so the Mark hands over the money. And then they wait. However, you know, with these cons, something always goes wrong. The con artist will return in a week or two.
There's been a hiccup.
They tell the Mark.
One of the Spanish magistrates needs his palms to be greased with a bribe.
Or
the ship meant to transport the nobleman home is stuck in port.
Or
the nobleman has fallen ill and needs to pay for medicine before he can travel.
So
we need a little more money.
And so the Mark is slowly bled dry, sending more and more money with every request. Or they catch wise and refuse. It's a true classic. And as time progressed, so did the scam. And with the dawn of the telephone, the fax machine, and email, it also has evolved. Oh, thanks, Kennedy, for being a great con artist.
Anytime, MJ.
And one day I was looking in my spam folder or my email, and I had a message in there that had just come in a day or two prior, and it was from someone who was going by the name Noemi Raphael. And Noemi Raphael told me in this email that she was married to the late Mr. Ethan Raphael, and he was a businessman and politician here, and I say that in quotes because I don't know where here is yet. But before his sudden death, apparently they deposited a sum of $4.6 million into one of the leading banks in their country and wanted to pass those funds on to me. And so I thought to myself, I wonder if I could ever figure out who's on the other side of one of these things.
Aha, the game is afoot.
So I went to a covert account that I have, completely unrelated to where I received the email, because I figure this person is probably shotgun spamming a whole bunch of different emails to try and get somebody to bite, right? So I send an email from a covert account that I have, and I say, hey, I got your message on my work account, and I don't tell them who it is. And I say, I'm really interested in this opportunity. I'm very sorry to hear about your poor health and the passing of your husband and things like that, right? And so the social engineering begins.
The subtle art of social engineering. And a quick glossary check here for anyone who's unaware. It's basically using deception to manipulate people to reveal sensitive or personal information.
And I tried to do a couple of things at the beginning, like I embedded a URL into my signature in my email that had a Grabify link in it to try and grab their IP address if they would be curious to click on it, which they didn't oblige me. So I continued the conversation. And the very first thing I did was say, hey, you know, my kids have told me to be leery of people online who might want to, you know, scam me or otherwise. And so I just want to make sure you're on the up and up. So this person was nice enough to send me some fake bank documents from the Ivory Coast over near Ghana. And of course, I researched those documents and the seals that appeared on them and the names, the bank officer names and things. And of course, that was all fake. But fairly quickly in this back and forth conversation, after, you know, I felt comfortable trusting them, of course, they advised me that they needed some information from me. And that information was my name, my address, my phone number, and a copy of my passport or my ID. So I had played up the role of being the sort of tech inept, older person who doesn't quite know how to use the systems they're on and things like that. And so I went and I created a fake name. I grabbed an address for actually the United States' largest apartment complex which you can find in New York. I used that apartment complex's general office number, and I re-engaged with this person. Now, I sent a new Grabify link in place of where my driver's license photo was and said, I couldn't figure out how to attach my photo to this email, so I've given you a link to it here.
And the trap is set.
And much to my surprise, they did click on the link, and they clicked on it from a clear IP address that I was able to run through a number of IP tools and figure out that it was a residential IP address, wasn't a VPN IP or a known, you know, Tor exit node or anything like that. I went to a site called I Know What You Download, and I was able to see that they torrent files at that IP address and what kind of TV they watch and things like that.
Take a life lesson from your Uncle MJ here, kids. Never click a link in an email. I know it's tempting. Just make sure you know who the sender is and that you trust them.
And so I continued the engagement with this person on the other end of the email. And I used that IP address and searched it through breach data. And I found a breach record connected to the IP address from actually right around the time frame this was all happening. So a fairly recent result. That IP address resulted in a connected email address and a name. And I used that email address and the name associated with it. And I went to Facebook. I did a bunch of searches trying to find this person on Facebook. And using the general area around the Ivory Coast there, Western Ghana, where I knew that this IP address was coming from, and also where these bank documents were from, attaching that location to my search within Facebook, I was able to find this person at their Facebook account who was connected to the IP address. Now, I don't know for sure that they're the one on the other side of the computer, but they're very likely coming from the same location that this IP address was. And I felt better about it because it was pretty recent that it hadn't been recycled and, you know, used by somebody else. And it was an IPv4, so that also helps for me. So we continue our conversation and I continue to play games with them. They want me to send them some money. So I realized along the way, okay, they haven't really demonstrated what their scam is going to be yet. Was it going to be identity theft or something else? And it turned out to be an advance fee scam.
Remember our Spanish prisoner story at the top of the episode? This is basically the same thing. Griffin was being asked to put down a small sum of money in exchange for a later return of a tidy fortune.
So this person was very generous in their offer to allow me to also receive, in addition to my $4.6 million, the accumulated interest in this account, which of course was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point, right? So for the sum of $1,260, I could obtain the account with all of the accrued interest. Or if I wanted to save a little money, for $860, I could get the account with just the $4.6 million in it. Now, naturally, I want the bigger piece of the pie, right?
Hell yes, you do.
So I'm going to pay them $1,260. And I thought, well, maybe the information that they give me at this point in the scam will help expose more information about them, because they obviously intend to get this money, right? And so I said, you know, I'd like to send you this money. You know, tell me what to do. And they said, okay, here's how you do it. You do an online bank transfer and you go to, you know, your bank and you give them this routing number. Here's the checking account number. Here's the savings account number. And here's the name. And I'm going to take off this person's first name, but the name was Mr. Smith. It actually was a Smith named person.
Now, I just want to note here that this can be different depending on the scam and the scammer. Sometimes they will ask for gift cards or cryptocurrency.
And at first I thought, well, this must be, you know, made up, right? Because, you know, Smith, it's going to be a common name. They must have made this up. But then I thought, well, no, they intend to get this money from me. So maybe this Smith person is real. But I didn't have enough to go on because the name was so common and I don't have access to people's bank accounts, so I can't figure out who this Mr. Smith is. So I thought maybe I can elicit more information from them. And I went back after a couple of days and I said, hey, my bank wouldn't allow me to transfer money. I went there, they told me no. But I asked my son about transferring money, and he said that I can use an app like a Cash App or a Venmo. He has those things. I just need to know how to send you the money that way. Because I knew that they would have to give me some kind of potentially identifiable information to use one of those. And once again, they obliged and provided me with an email address to be able to look them up on one of these payment platforms to be able to send them the $1,260.
Yeah, and this is the interesting thing about this scam. So in order to receive money via a bank transfer, this scammer has a legit bank account in the US. That requires someone local to set it up. And banks don't just let anyone open accounts. You need usually to provide an ID or social security number. And all this stuff is traceable. And it's why a lot of scams don't ever ask for money directly, but something like gift cards or crypto. These things are harder to trace. But money moving through US banks, well, those accounts are tied to actual people. So who is this Mr. Smith?
So I took that email address, and it had a fairly unique username. Now, this has got to be an innocent person, right? So I won't expose their information, but we will say that it was elephant911, I'll say, at, you know, gmail.com or something like that, right? So I was able to use that elephant911 email address to identify Mr. Smith, the actual real Mr. Smith, who lives in the United States. And when I dug into him, found him to be an elderly man who was the pastor of a church.
It's always the ones you least suspect.
And so I figured out that this guy is probably not in on the scam with these folks from over in Ghana. He's most likely either an unwitting money mule, somebody who's been compromised or maybe thinks that they're doing a side business or something like that. Or maybe his computer's been compromised or his account's been compromised, things like that. So now he's a victim to me.
Oh, I guess. I mean, an elderly preacher, though, who runs a church is perfect cover for an international con operation. But yeah, I guess this version tracks. Mr. Smith was probably being played by the scammer. Maybe he was told that this was a method to transfer charitable funds, or maybe his bank account was hacked and the scammers were just using it to transfer money around. You'd be surprised how clever people can be.
And I want to package this up. And so in the end, I put together an entire report of what I did, the steps that I took, all the screenshots, including all this person's social media, their many YouTube videos, which... looking through those videos, I was able to actually geolocate their place of residence because this guy fancied himself to be a bit of a musician. So he made a number of music videos of himself out in front of his house and inside of his house, and had a pretty big social presence.
So the scammer moonlighted as a rapper in Ghana, or maybe he was a professional rapper and he moonlighted as a scammer. Regardless, Griffin had the guy.
So I packaged all this up and contacted a buddy of mine in the Secret Service who knew somebody in the field office that was near where Mr. Smith lives. Because the reality is, we're probably not going to get somebody to go over to Ghana and knock on the scammer's door, but we could potentially help Mr. Smith keep his bank account and, you know, not be the victim of a scam himself. That's my story of the time that I scammed a scammer.
International scams like this can be reported to the Secret Service or the FBI. In Canada, it's the RCMP's Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. But the kicker here is that the scammer himself is probably still making rap videos on YouTube. These scams are really common, and in places like Ghana or the Ivory Coast or Nigeria, there just aren't enough resources to go after every scam operation. According to the RCMP, Canadians lost about $530 million to fraud and scams in 2022. The Federal Trade Commission in the US, they say that the Americans lost about $8.8 billion that same year. Expand all this to the global stage. It's a huge business, and one that has countless victims. thanks to Griffin Glynn for coming on this episode of Cloak & Dagger. I've provided links to Griffin's work in the show notes. A big shout-out to Kennedy Chapel for her production support and playing an excellent, suave, Victorian-era con woman. This show is powered by Sapper Labs Group, so you should definitely check out their website, www.sapperlabs.com. I'll leave links in the show notes for you there, too. Please rate and review the show. Click subscribe, give us 5 stars. You should also share it around on your socials. You know, you could play it at your next dinner party instead of background music, or even better, go stand in the front yard of the person you love, hold an old stereo above your head, and blast this show really loud so they have to come to the window and see you. What can I say? We're hopeless romantics over here. This is Cloak & Dagger. I'm MJ Benias. Good hunting.